Welcome back to Cargumentative, where men who have real cars end up playing with Lego and radio-controlled cars. Tonight, I'm your host, Mike Salomon. It's actually quite powerful sitting in Thomas's seat.
You look powerful, Mike.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a germaphobe, so I wonder if he's going to like ever sit in the seat again.
Does he mind that you sneezed all over his armrest?
But I'm joined by...
Mark Paluta.
And Nadav Ravid.
Welcome, guys. I was away for a bit.
Where were you?
I went to the Lurie's, which was pretty cool. I'm like a bona fide marketing person.
Oh, nice. Was it fun?
It was in Durban. It was a seriously savage weekend. I heard it was amazing.
Did you drive any cars?
No, actually, a friend of mine said to me, can I please, on the Saturday morning, test drive a Carrera 3.2 for him?
Why didn't you?
Because if you knew the condition I was in, and I say that,
I knew you were going to say that.
No, because I'd been for a run, so I was tired. Yes, and I wanted to swim in the sea.
Obviously.
Yeah, and it was the second of three nights.
And you didn't drown.
I didn't drown.
Would you call yourself a marketing executive?
No.
What did you have
CCO.
To do?
CCO.
So what did you have to do at the Lurie's?
So the Lurie's is like the ad awards. So it's a bit like the Cannes ad awards, and it's pretty much for the whole of Africa. It's a proper story, but it's generally quite a lot of hanging around, talking a bit of shop. Advertising shop.
At a convention.
And you can just imagine there are a lot of off-the-wall characters, and there's pretty much parties every night. So
I think advertising, cocaine and tequila.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Well, I was going to say... Surely, I mean, if we rewind back to the 80s, would your job justify having a guard red 930 turbo?
No, only if it had a wing.
Yeah.
It was a Targa.
Well, obviously.
Turbo Targa.
No such thing.
Turbo Targa. Yeah, they were. Of course there were Turbo Targas. And it has to have red wheel centers.
Pinstripes on the seat.
Yeah. Yes, if possible, those little side strakes that are a little bit like Testarossas.
The Ali. Very nice.
But
does your position justify one of those? Your position at the Lurie's?
No, not
First
at all.
Question.
I had to go up on stage and I had to just sit there basically and say, and for the category of media innovation, the Lurie goes to.
Very nice.
Is there a chance we could win
Barnes,
a Lurie?
Barnes won a Lurie. Matthew Barnes, who we had on the podcast, won a Lurie. And he wolf whistled at me as I went out.
Nice.
I said, oh, stop.
Go, Barnes.
So there's no chance of us winning a Lurie.
No, you could win a Lurie.
So in other words, we...
Argumentative.
It's unlikely.
We couldn't. And you've got the reins today. We're very excited. But we're in good hands. You know, this is his natural
state. Presenter extraordinaire.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. I mean, I'm actually seriously nervous.
Yeah. Oh, my word.
I'm getting a little bit of a schwitz here.
Well, let's...
schwitz, not schwitz.
Let's get into it. What would Thomas do next?
All right, Thomas would...
And in the news, he's talking about some news.
And then he would come up with something, we talk about, like, Toyotas or a little cheap
or
something like that.
You have to always talk about Toyota at some point.
I mean, like, is it wrong to celebrate that... that an Uber-esque Toyota was destroyed under a bridge near the airport this week.
No.
Absolutely. Was it destroyed under the bridge at the airport, or was it destroyed elsewhere and dropped off there?
I didn't even hear about this. So there was an accident.
Scandal.
It was an accident. And the loss of the car wasn't the only loss that a lot of South Africans would celebrate.
Well.
But I'm not getting involved in that. I have no view on it. Please do not.
This is not a political show.
This is not a political show.
What we can just say
is that it seems like that Uber-esque Toyota just understeered into a pillar.
I did see that one actually. Now I remember.
Yeah, for our listeners, that is what understeered.
It's been a horrific.
Oh, you know what we said we were going to talk about in the news?
No.
Is that incident at the Festival of Motoring?
There's been some video footage flying around this week of carnage on our roads and our tracks.
Yeah, I mean, the bus that he left the handbrake up, that was brilliant.
What was
so cool is that the thing just basically, the wheels, it turned left, then right, then left, then right, and eventually just destroyed things.
You could have at least locked the steering, yeah.
What happened was that Carl Army at the Festival of Motoring, which Mark deemed to be a waste of time, there was a track session, and there was a an experienced driver driving a 488 Ferrari,
yep.
which is one of the newest ones, and he went down the main straight and had terminal brake failure at around 220 k's an hour.
Well, this is now, the claim.
I just wanted to say that 220 in that car means that he came off the throttle very early, because I was in the exact same place in the 4C and I saw 220. Mm. So, and I braked quite early for that corner, because that accident was an exact
replica
of two accidents that happened in Lamborghinis at that same corner.
Yeah. And they all claimed brake failure, and we went, foul play, no way.
Yeah, we said driver error and foul play, and it just seems that these guys, all on ceramic brakes, go down the main straight, probably four or five laps into their session, all of a sudden, nothing.
Yeah, so I no one actually...
Nothing, you mean no brakes?
No brakes. Foot to the floorboards. He did, though, different from the other two. So the other two went straight into the tires, and they came to rest, both the cars heavily, heavily damaged.
He tried to scrub speed by
turning heavily into the corner, and then the car dug in and it rolled. His passenger, his wife, unfortunately, had broken pelvis, had some bleeding on the brain, but apparently, like, both of them are fine.
So from a technical perspective, let's talk about brake fade and how can the brakes disappear on something like that, okay? So the way I think of it, and we know Kyle Army pretty well, the previous braking point to that braking point is coming onto the main straight, which is pretty much a 90-degree corner. So you brake really – it's one of the slowest points of the track. Am I right?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So you're coming onto that – onto the straight, and then how long is the straight? 300 meters? 500 meters?
No, it's long. They extended it. It's long.
Because it's very long.
Yeah.
And all of that time, you're cooling down the brakes. So you're now making the brakes more efficient in the process of going fast. Correct. How do they suddenly go off at the end of the straight?
Is it
a failure or is it fade?
No, so apparently that's the problem, that there wasn't fade. It was binary.
Just
there was
failure.
Nothing there. Now, I've had in a number of cars, because of them being old and maybe even on old fluid and stuff, at Kyle Army had a brake fade.
Yeah.
And I've lost brakes going out of the old mine shaft at the bottom. Now it's called Crocodiles. I think it's Crocodile. So that right-hander at the bottom. And I've had it before where you just – but you pump three times and you get the brakes back, and you can actually go very deep into that corner and not hit anything.
So
there, it's just too fast. And it seems to me you couldn't pump and get the brake back.
From my own experience, my last time I drove around Kyle Army, I think, was in my Aston with my wife, actually. And I experienced brake fade on about lap three, but not there.
Did you tell her?
Yeah, she knew all about it. It was more in sunset around there, okay? Definitely not at the end of that straight, because that, like I said, it's had the most chance to cool off. You've got full brakes at the end of that straight. That's why I found it weird.
Absolutely.
But they are saying that it's like, there was another article someone posted about Ferrari actually doing a recall on some cars where there was an issue. So it could be something like that.
But three accidents are the same. Anyway, I think we'll follow it. It's got a hell of a lot of airtime. I mean, Thomas said it. He posted it on his on Times Live and got like 6,000 views.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll watch that.
It's a high-profile car at a motor show at one of what's designed to be one of the fastest straights, certainly in South Africa, I think.
And but most amazing is that the wrap on the car didn't tear. Did you see the pictures?
It's supposed to be a red. It's actually a red car,
with a white
car. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, well, at some point, maybe not now, we must discuss what brake fade is.
Yeah.
Compared to what we're claiming or we think this is, which was complete brake failure.
Yeah.
You
can.
I think let's do a segment sometime on it. Let's do it on brakes and like what it feels like when it goes.
In other words, what's being put on the table at the moment about this incident is that there's a problem with the brakes. It's not brake fade, which is common to all brakes, basically. Mm. It's a problem with the setup of the brakes on the car. It might be software, and it might something to do with the calibration of the pads against the ceramic disc.
The fact that there is there are electronics involved in the braking of the car scares the hell out of me. Yeah.
Well, the thing is now, so one last thing. The more modern and the more tech they put into cars, the less connection there is between you and the car. So I believe that there's very little mechanical connection between the brake pedal and the actual brakes.
Well, it's probably drive-by-wire now.
There's a lot of funny stuff going on. Anyway,
Okay. Anyway, look, we're already 10 minutes in here, so
we need more news. Look at Mark being all strict.
I'm sorry, I'm a disciplinarian.
I'm a little bit surprised.
I'm tight, but I'm fair.
I think Paige is shouting at him through the glass.
There's something that we need to discuss, because...
What is it? Scary.
It's the Taycan. We have to discuss. It's probably one of the most important cars.
Is that how you pronounce it? Taycan.
Taycan. I don't know.
Taken.
I think it's Taken.
But
T-A-Y-C-A-N.
All right. Should I jump in there?
Explain to us what it is.
So a Porsche Taycan is. It's in terms of size. It's smaller than a Panamera. Okay. It's a sedan. But in a sort of a very nice Panamera coupe type shape. It's a four-door.
It's not as elegant as something like a Fisker, which I'm... It seems a bit ungainly.
We'll see. We haven't seen the thing out of wraps yet. Okay.
They've done a very good job disguising the lights.
Oh, God, and they've been... It's the usual leak, tiny little press leak after another for the last 2 years. What the big deal is that this is an entirely electric car. So it's a BEV, a battery electric vehicle, or BEV, as people are going to start calling them now. And then... And it's Porsche's first fully electric vehicle. In other words, a direct competitor to something like a Tesla Model S.
Yeah.
People are expecting Porsche levels of performance, refinement, and handling from this thing. And by all accounts, it's going to deliver. It's going to be an amazing new thing and a whole new world for Porsche to explore and continue developing the sports car for the next century, I suppose. So it's imminent. Yep. It's coming out. What has it done this week?
That's the words from Turkish origin. Soul of a spirited young horse. Right. So I think if we go to electric cars, no one is ever expecting any electric car to be slow anymore. Everyone just sees Teslas in ludicrous manner.
Yeah.
The real question is, how light can they keep it?
Not.
And how are they going to make it handle?
So 2 points that have been brought up by journos that have driven the Taycan recently, they were quite surprising. The first one is Porsche invited some guys to come and do 0 to 200 tests consecutively. Mm-hmm. So apparently the Model S in ludicrous mode can do it like these launches, but it can do like a handful and then it tells you can't anymore,
right.
Motor's overheating.
Mm-hmm.
The journos got tired before the car conked out. So Porsche, it doesn't do the same kind of 0 to 100, but it can do what it can do consecutively as many times as you like.
Yeah, and that's to do with, so it's a whole new world of cooling. Technology, and that's to do with battery cooling.
Yeah.
And the amount of heat that you can dissipate out of the battery. And they've obviously gotten on top of that in a better way than Tesla has at the moment.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that Andrew Frankel, I don't know if you saw this week, Andrew Frankel, for those who don't know, he's one of the oldest, most respected automotive journos in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If Andrew Frankel says something, well...
Well, he's the only guy to ever road test a McLaren F1.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he wrote this week that he was also invited to drive it. And what is surprising and what is encouraging is he says it handles brilliantly.
It handles brilliantly
and it rides brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of the fact that... it is still heavy. I think it's over 2 tons with the batteries. He describes the fact that you sit very, very low in it.
Yes, like that's what I was going to say. Yeah. So the batteries aren't underneath you. They're kind of stored everywhere else.
Are they? I don't know.
No, they aren't underneath you. That's why you can get so low.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, I didn't realize that. So it's encouraging, but it's still an electric car and I'm already bored.
Fastest four-door around the Nürburgring.
Yep.
But before we finish, I just want to ask you quickly.
742. 911E? Mm-hmm.
Is that the next step?
What do you mean?
911E. That's the underpin.
Like an E. Like an electric E.
Oh.
Yep. Will they revive the nameplate?
There's definitely space in the frunk for an electric motor, so they could do a hybrid.
The new body shell has room around the center tunnel as well for batteries and hybrid governs.
There you go. Yeah,
we know that already. So the 992.2... will likely at least have a hybrid version, if not a full electric.
Interesting. All right. Let me just finish the news. We're just going to have In Memoriam. Ferdinand Piëch died. Father of many, many Porsches. And
nephew to Ferdinand Porsche.
Nephew to Ferdinand Porsche, and he was actually a very important guy. And Nikki, what was her surname? I'm not sure, the fastest woman on...
Kolb. Cole something.
On four wheels, unfortunately. So she was on Mythbusters and Overhaul and died in a dragster type car. And
Yeah, so maybe we should take a break.
A break, and we'll be back in a second.
Guns, an essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents Guncast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, Guncast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find Guncast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. I think I'm getting the hang of this.
Yeah.
Cool. So for this segment, I was thinking about something. Between us, we've actually got a fleet of cars, and it's not going to be the focal point of it, but it got me to thinking. So this month actually was my month that I've got to do all of my renewals on my licenses. So I get, I've got the most amazing assistant. She went and I let them all lapse, and then they eventually all get renewed in 1 month, and it's just an easy way of administering it. So I was thinking to myself.
For those of us that have more than 12 cars.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got five, you've got 10. Something like that. But anyhow, so the thing about that I was thinking about is for routine maintenance, we've all got this model that we follow because this is what we've gotten used to. You buy a car from a dealer, you take it into the dealer, and then you crap yourself if you don't take it there because you lose your dealer stamp. But there's a whole lot of routine stuff that actually is just not difficult to do. And, and there's stuff that's actually, even if it sounds a little bit intimidating I wouldn't know how to do it, but changing brake discs, pads, you know, and things
very,
like that.
Very simple for a decent mechanic,
Now, I was thinking, first of all, from a convenience perspective, would it not be better to have a mechanic sort of almost on a retainer to come to the house and do all the oil changes and just systematically go through them and do a couple of little things here and there? Now, the question then, I was thinking, is that we've talked about it in segments before, the makeup of the modern dealership is not what it was. They now tend to be little showrooms. You almost choose your item and then they throw you the keys and say, go to the back and find which one you want. We've been through this.
That's the other dealership.
But, you know, if I go and take this thing, and funny enough, I've got a guy who comes to the house and does a belt service on the Ferrari. He does it in the cave. And it's such a pleasure that. Now,
some stuff it's okay.
No, I agree. So I think I'm going to ask the question around, is there, with the changing world, is there a chance that the model could be that someone is going to come to your house? So, instead of you going and missioning and having to get dropped and all that type of thing, all the routine stuff, the dealers send someone to your house, and while you're sitting there watching TV, they come in and in 2 hours, they change the oil, they change the fluids, they give you, they check your brake pads, anything that needs to be done in the workshop, they say, listen, do this, check it in, and it's much easier to
honestly
schedule.
There's no reason why a man in a van can't do that, especially when it comes to routine stuff like an oil change and a brake fluid change and even changing things like brake pads. That can all be done with mobile jacks and jack stands and that kind of thing. So the only stuff I think that would be where your car would have to go in is anything where the car needs to be put up on a lift. Well, we're hoping you get a lift soon, though.
Yeah.
Obviously. But, so there is merit in it. I think obviously they would charge a call-out fee, because they've got to cover the cost of coming out there. But, it could work.
So what kind of environment would you need? Because, you obviously, if it's out in the backyard, you can't have water and all kinds of things.
A level garage where that could work. They have to have, and they'd have to obviously bring their own tools.
Yeah.
So they'd have to have a van where they come and they've got all their jack stands and tools and fluids and they could take away the waste. It's no big deal. There's a business opportunity here.
I think so. I mean, look, I also think that that's just the convenience of it. Like, yeah. Sending cars in nowadays, I heard that Lexus, when you go, you can literally go and they've got a business center, you can go and sit and you can work while they fix your car.
Yeah, they do. So any service or garage that offers you like a loan car or a drop-off facility and a pickup facility, I know BMW does that and VW does that, that's cool. That's really nice. Depending on how long your car is going to be in there for. Most services, if you drop it off in the morning, you can pick it up in the afternoon if you've got it scheduled. But on that point, let's go back to talking about the service, the dealer stamp,
yeah,
and how important that is, or what a perceived importance that has. So I know in South Africa, and I don't know if it happens in other parts of the world, when you buy a car, you look for a service history and preferably a history carried out by the main dealer. The reason being is you trust that they at least had knowledge of the vehicle and had the correct tools, so it wasn't done in a backyard somewhere on the cheap.
But we're just trying to justify doing it in the backyard.
Yeah, but by the right person.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, I suppose between us, we share a guy that works on our cars, and he works on pretty much anything.
Yeah.
But we know his credentials, you know.
Absolutely.
He's a Porsche Gold certified mechanic, and we, you know, because of that, we trust him with our stuff. But will the next person understand that?
Yeah.
If there's a next person.
Absolutely.
You have to explain that, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, on the 308, which, it's an old Ferrari, and I was always obsessed with either having, like, the dealers, which I never really trust them on the old cars, but having, like, a guy who'd worked on the cars forever. So I had this old Italian mechanic named Luigi. I'm not making this up.
Did you have an espresso when you went there?
Yeah, and a grappa. But you'd go there and take 6 months to go and fix the cars and things like that. But then, you know, as you rightly say, we've got this mechanic, and I've sent the 308 to him, and to be honest, on the routine stuff, it's not rocket science.
But even if it is rocket science, you'd prefer that he tries it. Because in a lot of cases, like you were saying, you're an old Ferrari. Dude, as Ferrari current, know what's going on in that old Ferrari. In a lot of cases, Dove's shaking his head, but he needs to start talking.
Planning for a gap because you're actually just yabbering.
Okay, so we'll lead you into it with that. Tell us about your experience.
I just wanted to take like 18 steps back and say that I'm intrigued by Mark's idea. In the end, it's about convenience. I think, you know, we've chosen to have large, varied car collections. They're not all of the same manufacturer, which presents a challenge when it comes to servicing them all. Just the amount of up and down, dropping cars off, picking them up, blah, 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 making a plan with work and with everything to make sure that the cars are where they need to be at the right time. If you've got more than 5 cars, it starts to become a lot of work.
I'm
intrigued. So in the same way that what you've done is you've streamlined the process of your licensing and you do them all at once, someone who could come and service all your cars over the space of a day or two
would make it enormously. So maybe
it should be mentioned, and maybe this is the way that I perceive it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but cars are designed to be easy to work on, particularly modern cars. Because the less time it takes you to do something, the more of them you can do, right? So doing a service on a modern vehicle should be exceptionally easy. They've had 100 years to perfect doing it. The stuff is actually simple and quick, and the access is probably not as difficult as you're thinking it is right now.
Yeah.
In which case, that kind of stuff lends itself to being done, informally or on your premises or in a mobile fashion. So I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think how it would work practically. On the one hand, let's say you buy a new Lexus, maybe you would pay a little bit extra initially for the premium service package, which includes effectively a concierge that comes to you.
Yeah.
But alternatively, someone who you hire who's a private individual or that doesn't have a special mark, that comes in their private capacity as a all-round general mechanic and comes to your house and services them all. I don't know how it would present itself, but in the end, what I'm thinking is that really, it's not really about where you do the service. It's about the convenience.
Yeah, that's
for me. It's not about doing it in my garage and not doing it in my garage and doing them all at once. It's about the faff.
Yeah.
If you come fetch my car,
yeah.
If you come fetch it and bring it back,
yeah.
That's just the same as doing it at
home. Yeah, absolutely.
So in the end, so this is the thing. Now the people actually, so they are offering this at the moment, because if you're a fancy special Porsche client, they come and fetch it from you.
Do they?
Yes. Yes, they do. Well, that's and if clever. You have more than one fancy Porsche, they bring a whole freaking truck and they load them all on all at once and they take them away for you.
That's nice.
And
that's
when they've all been serviced, they bring them back again. Yeah, so it's not pie in the sky.
The amount of time it takes me sitting in traffic to get to my mechanic.
Absolutely.
The oil change is half the time.
Right.
The trip there.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so the argument for your mechanic is that he could come back and forward and fetch each of your cars, or he could bring his van to you and do all the straightforward stuff on your premises.
Could do.
I think there's merit in this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, just interesting, an anecdote in a similar vein is that a friend of mine was having his Lamborghini Huracan serviced.
As one does.
Last week before they went on a trip down to Cape Town.
No, of course.
And he put it on Instagram saying that he's taking his Huracan in for its first service. In mid-morning, someone phoned up and said, listen, we need the car for a shoot. Just cancel the service. We're not going to do it because it needs to have a shoot for the thing. We're coming to fetch it now.
Really?
And, they phoned him just to say, listen, are you coming to fetch your car? And it turned out to be someone coming to steal it.
Oh.
And they arrested the good fellow. So, just be careful what you post.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to say, just in terms of mechanical stuff, I'm quite proud of myself today. I gave some advice.
You did?
Yep. On Cars and Coffee Group, someone was asking for mechanical advice on a Land Rover.
Yes.
Yes, and I said the answer was petrol. and a match.
So Paige has made an interesting statement in our WhatsApp group. She said, and I quote, but are you even a guy if you don't even change your own oil? Now, Paige,
Do you even lift, bro?
So I came from a background of always looking after my own cars until I suppose the cars get to a point that they are worth considerably less if you work on them yourself.
But this is what you were alluding to, is it's not that you can't work on them yourself, it's that there's value in the dealership stamps.
Exactly, and because so people trust not to. The dealership.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily know how good you are at what you did.
So we tried to change something. We only overfilled the thing by 3 liters.
Exactly.
Couldn't understand where all this oil was going.
No one knew.
No.
I still don't know where it went.
It went into the... it's got a separate...
Like thingy, you couldn't change gear after that.
We overfilled the classic Ferrari with gearbox oil, but it's okay.
It's got a transfer box. So the gearbox sits next to the engine, mm-hmm. and there's a transfer box that transfers the power from the engine to the gearbox.
Yep,
we filled that up.
No, we filled everything.
Because Mike said that's the filler plug. So I don't know any better.
Okay, well.
Okay. So that taught us.
But that's the extent of my oil change. So like
we have someone that can mop up the pieces behind.
But there
it.
Are things that we do tackle on our own, and we do feel a sense of triumph when we get them done properly. But best to let someone with because the problem is tooling. So with modern cars is you need a lot of specified
old cars
tooling.
You just need a hammer.
Old cars you just need a hammer, exactly.
You'll be in old cars, I know that someone always said to me that you'd be surprised how far you can get with just a standard socket set.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't need much more, but newer cars and particularly properly modern, up-to-date cars, there's a lot of very specific proprietary tools that you need for various jobs.
Yeah.
And the problem with that, it's a little bit engineered in.
Yeah.
And so it works two ways. They create the proprietary tools so that you're forced to bring them the car.
Because they make money that way.
The other thing is that the electronic systems, as cars become more complicated from an electronic point of view, they create security around the electronics. And so and they don't release that information. It's not public property. It's in the public domain. So, for example, you can't get through all of Porsche's security checks on a modern 991 to change things or reset things in the computer, and you're therefore obliged to get Porsche to do that for you, which means you're obliged to take it to them.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've got a very good point in case. I always pride myself in doing... I mean, I restored a car, so...
He did.
I think I know my way around the spanner.
Other than the steering, it's great.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll get there. Yeah.
Oh, and the gearbox.
Yeah. And the wrong color.
Yeah, and the color.
Jeez, God.
It's almost perfect.
Anyway, so I attempted to change my wife's brake pads in her car. I've changed brake pads on everything that I've ever owned.
Yeah.
So her car happened to have an electric handbrake, which I'd never tackled before. And you need to get into the system to deactivate the handbrake. There's no other way of doing it, really, to get it to release even more than it would normally so you can get the pads out.
Oh.
So I had to take it to a specialist. No.
I'm not, for 1 second, advocating fixing your own car. I'm looking for convenience. I want to watch Netflix while someone fixes my car.
Well, I think that there's something...
You don't watch Netflix, you want to watch sport, Mark.
Is a house call mechanic...
I'm trying to sound, make myself sound contemporary.
Oh, okay.
Is a house call, I do want to watch sport. Is a house call mechanic such a pie in the sky thing to
I don't know, what about a house call doctor?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
Why don't they do that anymore?
Yeah, it's been phased out.
Equipment.
I mean, equipment. Testing.
I saw a video recently with a house call nurse.
Yeah. Did you?
it was brilliant.
We weren't going to discuss those personal videos.
You
send
that
anymore.
To me, Mike. All right, that's all we've had for on the segment.
Not sure.
Okay, cool. Okay, we'll be back. We'll be back in a minute.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amrao, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a chef.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Cargumentative, where we're going to talk a little bit about the car market, the classic car market, and what's going on. So the world is on a little bit of a, I'm not going to say a knife edge, but people are a little bit antsy at the moment internationally. The IMF has been talking about world economic growth being a little bit suppressed. In South Africa, we've had some serious economic problems mm-hmm. recently, and cash is very tight out there. If we look at all the indices, and so weird, like in the classic car market magazines, they always show the Hagee Index, which is from Haggerty, and they do indices on various marks. They seem to always show the ones that are really like moving upwards, and it doesn't seem to show much of correction. But the sentiment in the market is that there has been a significant correction. So the real question.
Do you reckon internationally?
Internationally, absolutely. So cars like and I'll tell you like what have dropped. Cars like Testarossas are starting to pull back. Even Daytonas, which are triple A grade cars, are starting to pull back. You know, there are things like the 550 Maranello now starting to pull back, and you know it's definitely not what it was. From our perspective, we all knew that, there was no way it could keep on going the way it was.
So what category of, let's say, sports car is pulling back, and what's immune to it?
Well, it seems at the moment that Porsches have done really, really well for the last 2-3 years. Really well. I mean, like where, you know, it's been really good to own a classic Porsche for the last while. But even here in South Africa, you're starting to see that they've got like 964s that are dipping under R1 million. I can't get my head around it. I am absolutely certain that the 996 GT3s are just a complete and utter joke. There's one for under R1 million at the moment, a Mark 1.
At Porsche Center.
Guys, I can't get my head around why these cars are so cheap. You know, I remember when the 964 RSs were $250,000 and now they're $2.5 million, maybe $3 million. So I think that the 996 GT3s are going to be are definitely things to be collecting. But having said that, you know, there's some interesting things that are happening out in the market. It seems that people are starting to buy cars that are cheap but just fun to drive. So I've got collector friends in Europe, but proper collectors. I mean, David, my friend, he's got a 550 Maranello. He's got a 365 Boxer. I mean, he's got
those are proper
cars, Porsches, the collectible Porsches. He went and he bought a 1997 Boxster, which was the first year of production.
Not a Boxster S, just
not a Boxster.
2.7.
Just a 2.5. The 2.5, the original 2.5, which had the same horsepower, 204 horsepower, 150 odd kilowatts, same as a 911 SE. Bought it. Just to put it in context, he had a GTI, 1989-90 GTI, very nice one with BBS rims, beautiful car. And he sold it for like £5,000, and he bought the Porsche for £3,000. Now I see him driving around this Porsche, and he's in France now, I think. He's in Guernsey.
He was driving around. Yeah, driving around France. Yeah.
I mean, he's got a Cayman GT4. So just to put it in context, but he's in love with this thing.
Yeah.
What's other friend of ours, Ono, who lives in Holland. Also, he had a 330 GTC, like proper collectible Ferrari. He had a 550 Maranello and a 365 Boxer, which actually is the one that Dave's got now. He just went out and he bought a 986 Boxster S, and also completely enamored with it.
So 986s and 996s are the bargains at the moment.
Well,
996s have been a bargain for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Actually. And they're starting to climb, actually.
Yeah.
Even in this market.
And something significant happened today, whether it drives the market or not, but it just shows that it is people starting to look at these things. But Magnus Walker, who's quite a well-known personality around Porsche, put out a message on Instagram saying he's looking for a 996
Carrera.
Either a GT3, you said, either Mark 1 GT3 or a Carrera, but we wanted one with a GT3 aero kit, which makes it basically look like a GT3. I think for the price that the GT3 is, my recommendation to him is he should just go straight for the GT3.
He's got one. 996.2.
He's got a 0.2.
Has he got a 0.2?
Yeah. Okay.
That's why he wants a Carrera.
We bought them around the same time.
Yeah.
We bonded over it. Actually.
Really,
yeah?
I can see you're very, very...
So we've got another friend of ours who's in the process of buying a 996 actually at the moment. And they're great cars. They're absolutely fantastic cars.
Well, my brothers have got two 987s, both white. You know, one's a 2.7 Boxster and the one's a Boxster S.
So I can't tell you
how good these things are.
To the layman out there, these are all the first generation liquid cooled Porsches.
Yeah.
Boxsters and 911s. And they are pretty bulletproof.
Well,
really fun.
It.
Really, really fun. Lots of bang for your buck. And really reliable, really good, like aircon, good power steering. You know, normally Bose sound systems and those kinds of things. They're really great cars.
Very, very lovable. And I tell you, like, just, you know, the funnily enough, the Boxster S is very, very cool. Ashley's Boxster S is really good. But Greg's Boxster 2.7, to be honest, it's on skinny tires on the 16-inch. It's just fun. And, you know, I mean, here in South Africa, these things have kept their values relatively well. Overseas, as I say, £3,000 for a good, solid example.
So, Mark, what are we saying in the marketplace at the moment? Because we also saw a bit of an auction whoopsie last week where... who was it? Gooding & Co. had some... Was it Gooding & Co.?
Yeah, it was the...
At Amelia Island auction or whatever.
The 1939...
Bonham's at Pebble, but
got it completely wrong.
It's all good.
it was effectively the first Porsche, which wasn't a Porsche. It was actually on a Volkswagen chassis, and it had...
But that whole auction was bad.
Like it was terrible.
Everything didn't go for what it should have gone for.
Yeah, and they measure the auctions in terms of... the percentage sold, the percentage above estimate, the percentage below. And you can definitely see that bargains are starting to be had. But just beware. I don't think that the drops in values are necessarily unfounded. I think that there are cars that have sat in so-called collections for 2-3 years. And they are in massive need of maintenance.
So there's a good point coming out of that as well. So what's our advice to people? That we've given them advice on what Porsches we believe they should buy, but also to be careful of cars coming out of collections that haven't been well looked after.
Yeah.
A lot of guys bought these things like paintings to hang them on the wall, but never went through the annual maintenance schedule that they should have had. So make sure you get your oil changes done and that kind of thing if you buy them.
Yeah, but I mean, my advice is, if you're going to put your money into the stock market, it's going to tank. Rather put it in, make a cheeky offer on a classic car and at least watch the place burn from a...
Well, that's how this whole thing started. People started moving their money out of the stock market into cars.
Yeah.
And that's what got this whole trend going up. So we never know. The car market's funny, huh?
I think there's nothing wrong with going and offending someone on the first offer.
Yeah.
Hit them low.
They're not going to hit you. They're just going to swear at you.
To give a little bit, maybe I must give a little bit of, maybe it's a bit late for a little bit of context, but if you're talking about the classic and collectible market and you're looking at purchasing a car, you know, that's not a modern car, there's sort of the way I see it is it's divided into strata, like rocks, you know, from top to bottom. And there's the cream on the top, and that's the blue chip stuff. And the cream on the top never changes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. There's very few cars that live there, and they will always go up.
They're the Mona
Lisas. Well, I don't think they're the Mona Lisas. But you can nail
they're the Mona Lisas.
They're the Mona Lisas.
Yeah.
I'm talking about GTOs, 250 GTOs. But, I'm talking about
even so, there may be McLaren some corrections F1s. There.
You buy into the blue chip right at the top there.
Yeah.
Bugattis, yeah. Early Bugattis, and you're going to be fine. But there's only a limited amount of people that play in that market at any one time in any case.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the old cars that are just old. Okay, mm-hmm. They're not classics, they're not collectible, and unfortunately those things continue to depreciate. Really, when we talk about the classic car market, we talk about the stuff that's in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that's not rare enough or special enough or perceived to be rare or special enough to be blue chip, but it's special enough and rare enough and sporty enough and has enough heritage to be respected and wanted, and probably the demand exceeds the supply.
Yeah.
And so what Mike was talking about earlier is that the top of that middle strata, Testarossas, Ferrari Daytonas, 550 Maranellos, there's been a correction there. And what happened is that the people got swept up in the last 3 to 5 years with values.
Yeah.
They were swept up along with their blue chip brethren.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be that at the top of the middle, there's a correction back downwards again, and that's, I think, what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Probably
that's a good
probably yeah. a realistic correction.
Yeah.
I don't think it's uncalled for. But what's happened is that there's a lot of cars. 5 years is actually not a long time to own a car, and what's happened is people are losing money now. You buy high,
absolutely,
and you expect it to continue to go high, and now, unfortunately, either your consignment didn't sell in the auction,
yeah,
in which case you're stuck with it, or it's sold for far less than you expected.
Yeah.
I think that's what.
And a lot of people are going to get hurt by that.
I'm just putting it in other words.
Look, the good news is that now your wife can sell something for closer to what you told
it
you paid
for.
But let me ask you this, just in closing.
Mm.
Right now, assuming there was a 25% correction in terms of prices at what it was a year ago, what would you be buying? What would tempt you? So, I mean, I'm throwing it out there, like a 700,000 Rand
3-8 Ferrari. 3-8 I think that's. Yeah, if they correct it down, what are they sitting at now? Like 2 million?
2 million, yeah, maybe more.
Mm. So if they correct it to 1.5, if not less, it's a good buy.
I've never understood the prices of 964s and 3.2 Carreras. I just can't understand it. I've driven enough to know that.
He doesn't understand them, that's why.
1.2 million Rand. Which is more than a 996 GT3,
yeah,
makes no sense to me.
You and I are completely in agreement.
And
there.
I think at the 600, 700 mark, a 964 is it's an amazing, beautiful car.
Yeah, if you can do that.
Yeah, so something like that. There's a few things that are sort of heavily overpriced in it. I don't like. People must look at Alfa. Alfa's realistically priced. You can get a lot of car for your money.
Poor man's Ferrari.
It's always been a sweet spot.
Yeah,
they
never got swept up with the hype. They just managed to dodge it.
Priced.
They were always realistically priced. There was one or two
really nice cars, great experience.
But you're right, it's a lot of car for the money now. It's fun, and they're cheap to maintain.
All right, guys. So let's try and keep your hard-earned rands under the pillow because there are.
There are
bargains coming, and as I say, like let's not be shy of offending guys on first offers.
Okay.
Just
not us.
Yeah, lowball everyone.
Yeah,
just not us. Cool, thanks.
We've got a special coming.
Yeah, we've got a special coming. Oh, so this weekend we're going to be getting out our best clothes because we've got to look stylish.
Flat caps.
Flat caps, maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe even a cravat.
Okay.
Might be in order. We're going to the Concours.
Stain City.
And, we're going to be seeing some very, very beautiful cars, beautifully prepared as well. We're going to interview some people. We're going to try get to grips with people's, they're going to tell us about what it's like to prepare a car for Concours and... you know, like what makes it, what goes into it, and I'm interested in how much it actually costs to prepare a car for Cargo.
Yeah, interesting.
So we'll meet you in a spring weekend in Johannesburg at Steyn City this weekend, and we'll be producing a special Cargumentative.
And it should, if last year's event was anything to go by, it should be great.
Mm.
It was really well put together. Yeah. Beautiful scenery. It was lovely.
More content, Ax.
More content.
Lekker.
And that's all. I hope you enjoyed the show. For me, it was quite cool I got through my first gig as being a presenter.
I think Tom is going to lose his job.
Yeah.
I don't know
Job?
I don't
know. God.
He's going to be relegated to your
seat. After he gets the duct tape off his chair, and then he'll work it out. all right, guys. That's all for now.
Have a good
day. Ciao. Bye.
Bye.